गुरुर्ब्रह्मा गुरुर्विष्णु गुरुर्देवो महेश्वरः गुरुस्साक्षात् परब्रह्मा तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। ध्यानमूलं गुरोर्मूर्तिः पूजामूलं गुरोर्पदं मन्त्रमूलं गुरोर्वाक्यं मोक्षमूलं गुरोर्कृपा। ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ घुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्ति। आफ्टर् दि क्रियास् दट् वी डिस्कस्ड् यस्टर्डे कम् दि आसनस्। दि टू basic Hatha Yoga texts we are looking into do not mention most of the asanas that we practice. Of the popular asanas that are practiced every day, only 3 or 4 are mentioned. Paschimottana asana is mentioned. Somewhere Shalabhasana or Bhujangasana is mentioned. Dhanurasana. Except these 2 or 3, they concentrate more on the sitting posture, because the asanas are basically meant for meditation, pranayama and meditation. But they do not completely omit what we practice as asanas. Some more complicated ones are also mentioned, like Kukutasana. You will find that in that book at the end. Kukutasana and Garbhapindasana, tying yourself into knots. And some others are also mentioned. But all told, there are very few yoga asanas mentioned in the texts. One way of looking at it could be this, that they concentrate, or they intended to concentrate a lot on pranayama and meditation, and you cannot go on sitting for a long time in looking at your nose or, you know, holding your nose or meditating. So that is it. After some time you feel a bit tight somewhere and you stand and do some yoga postures. That seems to have been a basic intention. I have said this before, Swami Shivananda himself practiced and advocated just a few asanas. He liked the Shirasasana. He could do it only at the tripod. You know what I mean?
With the hands
in front. That is, you draw a triangle mentally. Instead of doing that, draw a triangle mentally. The two base angles, the hands occupy the two angles lower down, and the head on the other angle. That's all. Yeah. That's it. And then I used to stand upside down for a little while. That he liked. Sarvangasana he liked. In a manner of speaking, and from there he would go down to the something like Halasana and hold that posture for a few seconds. Sometimes I have seen him do the Matsyasana and the Paschimottanasana.
Wash over his breath.
Pardon?
I said wash over his breath.
Oui. Headstand, you know.
Yeah.
Paschimottanasana, you know, the forward bending. Yeah. And Sarvangasana is what you people unfortunately call shoulder stand. It is not shoulder stand. It's Sarvanga, means it is something which brings into play all the parts of the body. In Matsyasana, you know, it's counter posture.
Fish posture,
right. These are the few that he used to do, and sort of his own version of the spinal twist. not terribly difficult. And these are the only ones he usually recommended for our own daily practice.
I missed one of them, the second one after the shoulder, after the headstand.
Shoulder stand. Sarvangasana.
I see. So that's just four.
I mean, you have about a dozen of them in the books here. That is Swami Shivananda's own choice.
I see. Uh-huh.
The others have elaborated, complicated, which is nice. If you want to do them, it's very good. Why do we practice these yoga postures? And how do they differ from mere gymnastics? That's something worth looking into and understanding. In your famous trick of standing at the edge of a chair, would you want to do it again? Please, can you just turn a little bit and look? Two things happen. Two things happen. As he does that, stand steady. Keep your heel steady. What else happen? Whatever else might happen. You might also find that your the calf muscles and the thighs are tightening up. One, there is a compensation taking place from moment to moment, right? The toes are tingling and so on. And at the same time, the calf muscles and the thighs are tightening up. Thank you, come down. Now, the phenomenon is the same, but it can be looked at from two completely different angles. One looks at it from inside and wonders how the body balances itself. One looks at it from the energy point of view and the intelligence point of view. What is that intelligence in the body that is able to balance and maintain that balance in spite of all this danger and the risk? The other, the gymnast, looks at it this way. My God, I can see that quite clearly. When the intelligence wants to, or whatever it is, when the body is threatened, there is strength. The calf muscles tighten and the thighs become tight. That's how. Now he has already figured out how that intelligence has brought this about. And he says, make the whole body tight, you have strengthened it. So even though the text does mention the word strength, what exactly does strength mean? Beef? You know, you have seen the beefy look. Ah, yeah, right. And then you must ask a little slim young girl to hang on it. And you're strong, man. Whereas I have seen, I've often wondered how this is done. Lean, thin porters in Delhi goods sheds, you know, railway goods sheds, about one third your size, at least not more than that, one third, maybe one fourth. They are able just to roll a huge package, probably half a ton, on their shoulders and take it off, as if it's a featherweight. And of course now that these Japanese martial arts are becoming more and more popular, you have probably seen some of those tricks where a tiny little girl is able to cope with a huge, hefty, strong man, merely tipping him over. This is how they looked at it. The yogis looked at it. There is something within which is called prana, and which, I think, what do they call it? chi?
Tai
chi. Something they call it in Japanese, and in Tibetan it's called li. They looked at it from that angle. The strength is not muscular, but the strength is of the prana or the energy within. The gymnast looked at it as from the muscular angle. Who is right, who is wrong, we are not discussing here. We are merely giving you the facts. And therefore, while practicing the yogasanas, the yogi tries to discover the intelligence beyond the me, which is able to maintain the body, to balance the body, to bring about the necessary adjustments in the body from moment to moment in all these yoga postures. If that is done, you discover something marvelous, beautiful. If that is done, you discover that there is a built-in intelligence in every cell of your body, capable of looking after the body, bringing on illness, bringing on pain, bringing on death if need be, which presides over health and illness, which presides over life and death, which does not make any distinction between these, which does not divide life into, cut life up into all these bits and pieces, which looks at life as a whole. It's a marvelous thing if one is able to look at it that way. We'll come to that when I'll make you do some postures and see if you can note the difference. That seems to be the basic idea of the yoga postures. If they are done in this manner, then the practice of the yoga asanas becomes a continuous meditation, a dynamic meditation. And then you also learn that meditation need not necessarily mean sitting bolt upright in a chair on your meditation mat, but even while the body is in motion, the spirit can be in meditation. It's something deep within which can be in a state of meditation, whether or not the body is still. Then you discover that the body inwardly is never still. Yeah, right? Even when you are doing this, the blood circulation is going on, the lungs are working, the nerves are working, everything is working. In spite of all that activity, there is stillness. Stillness does not mean an inert, unmoving state, but stillness is a state of the spirit, I won't call it mind, which exists in spite of tremendous physical activity and perhaps mental activity too, perhaps. The discovery of that is the purpose of yogasanas. The discovery of that inner stillness, which coexists with intense physical activity. And then you don't complain, I don't have time to meditate. You have discovered the key, which transforms the whole life, your whole life into meditation. And then you don't complain, you grumble and grouse against, you know, a little pain, a little illness, a little sickness, and come the shadow of death. To you, the whole thing looks a lovely painting, a portrait, in which there are dark shades and light shades. Different shades of the same color. You don't protest against a dark shade in the painting, it's good. And therefore, in the same way, you don't protest against, you don't, your mind does not rebel against what is called illness, what is called old age. It's no old age, time progresses, no? Time has to be, keep moving. And you see that that intelligence is capable of looking after this body, and in the eyes of that intelligence, health and illness, life and death are not different, antagonistic features. Life is continuous. At some stage, someone looks at it and calls it health. At another stage, someone looks at it and calls it sickness. At one stage, you call it life. At the other stage, you call it death. If you absorb that, you immediately see that that is what you call health. That is what you really call health. And you must see it. You must see it in the face of people like Swami Shivananda, whose physical body was riddled with all kinds of clinical illnesses, but whose face was radiant. He didn't bother. And when he told the medical men that he had lumbago or he had diabetes, he said that with the same glee that this girl might say, oh, you know, my boyfriend bought me a diamond ring, I got a diamond ring, or I got a Cadillac. The same happiness, the same joy. I have a Cadillac. I have diabetes. That's a state of health which looks upon all these as mere superficial symptoms, which do not touch that life. It's the life that created all this, produced all this. Right. And therefore, the yogi initially values what you call physical health. Initially, the yogi values physical health. Why? If that initial health is not there, that illness acts as a barrier which prevents you from seeing this life stream within yourself. You cannot meditate. You cannot look within. You cannot transcend the ego barrier unless in the initial stages, till you come face to face with the spirit beyond the me, the body, the nerves and the mind are not in a state of health. Right? In a state of health, the body is able to take care of itself, which means it does not need your attention. And therefore you can go beyond it and look into the spirit within the body. In a state of health, the body does not demand any attention. You do not even realize you have a body. Can you even feel that you have a heart? No. But if someone says yes, which means there is some problem. There is a palpitation or some pain, angina pectoris, something, heart trouble. As long as there is no trouble, you do not even feel that you have a heart. As long as they are healthy, you do not know that you have lungs. Marvelous. If only we can meditate upon this message, our whole life will be much better. These vital organs perform such vital functions. Without them, you wouldn't even exist. But they don't. Come on, it's, you know what a nice chap I am? And we go about saying, and you may do, I may do a little, do you a little favor, and stand and must say thank you. Thank you very much, Swami. It may mean nothing. But they don't even look for thanks, gratitude, nothing at all. You can mess them up. They're absolutely, they don't interfere or obstruct your vision if they are in a state of health. And that's the only reason why the yogi looks for health, physical health. When you put these two together, health is a state of inner being, not demonstrable in musculature, and that it is an intelligence beyond the me. Then you are looking for the secrets of health within, deep within the body, not outside. And the yoga asanas act mostly upon the nerves and upon the powerhouse of all these nerves, the brain. The brain, the nerves, and the endocrine system. If we need harmony, the hormones should work harmoniously. I don't know, only the spelling seems to be different, but the idea is the same. Hormones, the harmony. Huh? I was once discussing this with a medical man. He was quite adamant that yoga asanas cannot possibly have any influence over these glands. And I relayed this opinion in a dialogue with another medical man in Washington. And he was quite definite. No, nonsense is this. They do have a definite influence upon the glands. And I told him, then what about the other medical opinion? He says, oh, he forgets one thing. That is, in other words, he says, both of us are right. The man who says that the yoga asanas cannot directly act on the glands is also right. That is, by doing the posterior stretch or the chakrasana and so on, you cannot act on the adrenals. That's not possible. But his, the second, the Washington doctor's contention is that when you squeeze, for instance, the neck, naturally there is a rush of blood to the neck. And also there is a, the attention is intensely concentrated on the neck. And in this commotion, the thyroid gland is benefited. Not because you are squeezing your neck, you are massaging the thyroid gland, it may not be directly true. But by all these indirect activity around the thyroid gland, the thyroid gland is nourished and its health restored. Well, we don't quarrel with about all that. We are not medical people. We are not interested in all that. It has been experienced by generations of practitioners of yoga that these postures have a beneficent influence upon the states of one mind, one's mind. That's all we know. We know this much, that these have a definite influence upon the states of one's mind, one's psychological states. And if these psychological states are to some extent dependent upon the hormones, then obviously they have some effect on the hormones. We don't have to perform autopsies and find out what's happening where. So these three, the brain, the nerves, the spinal column and so on, and the hormones, the glands. Even here, I think most of the yoga postures concentrate most of their attention upon the backbone. Either you bend the backbone forward or backward or twist or turn, do what you like. The yogis normally are not terribly keen on other parts of your anatomy, how they look and what they look like. That's up to you. Right? Let's have a look at some postures. Will do for me. I'll show you one, and then probably I'll make you experience it yourself. Let's go from the extremely simple to probably some complex ones. I think this is quite easy, isn't it? Yeah? Now, for instance, if you do this, also easy, isn't it? And you hold it for some time, what happens to you?
Does
the stomach become tense, the abdomen become tense, or does your mind become tense? Can you stop the mind from becoming tense? Try. Can you realize that it is the abdomen, that abdominal muscles, or whatever it is? Laugh, smile, do what you like. Do something like that. Yes, right. Watch your brain to see that you're not getting all that worked up. Because if the brain or the mind is tense, then you are not watching. You cannot watch. It's impossible. You cannot observe what's going on. And you cannot realize that the body in itself is capable of doing all that. Try a little more complicated ones. Again, the trick or the secret is to see from within that it is the body that does this, or the intelligence in the body that does it. The brain need not, if you bring the brain into it, the brain only feels anxious or tense, worried. Can everybody do the headstand here? Somebody says yes, somebody says no. It's easy. See, that's one of the easiest yoga postures. Now, see, you come up there and the leg goes up, yes? You are only looking at it and breathing. How on earth did it go up? And what holds it up? Not your brain?
Do
that? Oh, you fall only if you think you will fall. Throwing the leg up is easy. You don't kick. Right, good. Straight. No, no, that'll do. Parallel to the floor. Okay, 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 okay. We are seeing all the magic that happened. Straighten your, tighten your knees. Good, good. Can you, from within? Ah, right, right. You can laugh, you can smile, have toilets. There's nothing to it. Yeah, come on. Anybody want to try? Come. The thing to watch and to see is, it is the body that does all that. What's the mind doing? Am I doing it with the mind? Am I getting worried? That'll do. Watch and then straighten your legs. Mm-hmm, good, 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 good. Look at your shoulders, look at your elbows. Look at a little bit of anxiety building in the solar plexus. There's no need. The body is performing the yoga posture. Yeah. Then you do probably the most complicated yoga postures without any tension, without anything. And suddenly you realize that the headstand is, to stand on your head must be much easier than to stand on your feet. I'm not joking. Now, if you stand and make a circle around your 2 feet, that's all the space on which you are standing. And if you make a circle of that thing, you know, my elbows and etc., I'm standing in a much larger space. It should be easier to stand on one's head than to stand on one's feet. And yet, there is a crazy anxiety. I'm going to collapse and I'm going to fall down and I'm going to break my neck. If the anxiety is not there, the body is able to look after itself. And I'm not saying that you can do everything. If the anxiety is not there and the body is unable to do a certain thing, it will refuse to do it, it will collapse and fall down and take care of itself again. Like a baby. A baby can roll down the steps and come out laughing. You and I roll down the steps, we don't even come out, you go to the hospital. That's because we are anxious and that anxiety produces tension. The anxiety stops or prevents the natural intelligence in the body from flowing through. Right. What? Do you want to do the fish posture? While you are doing this fish posture, first you begin to watch what's happening, and then you suddenly realize that it is the lungs that are breathing. Are the lungs breathing? And if the lungs are breathing, why should there be an unnecessary movement? Exaggerated movement in the chest. As you watch deeper and deeper, deeper within yourself, the breathing becomes deep but calm. not agitated, non-violent. And the chest stays high. Thank you. There is another interesting feature. In a simple triangle, while you do that, all your attention is the mind in its anxiety focuses itself upon the organ where there is the greatest tension. Is that right? That's the purpose of tension. And that is how tension is produced. Now, I have... And suddenly, if you shift your attention onto the other foot, what is that other foot doing? It must be doing something to compensate. Just as if I lift one leg up, it is this one that is doing all the compensation. So instead of getting worked up about the limb that is aching, I think of the limb that is not aching. That's not... Now here, while doing this, I push that, the right foot out. Immediately this tension goes away. Do you want to try? Do the triangle. Make it as difficult as possible for yourself. Only then you experience this. Is doing something? Not yet? No. Not difficult enough for you?
Correct. Little more than that. Yeah, good.
And while tension builds upon your right foot, shift your attention to the left one. No, you're not doing it. If you do that, you will do...
No, wait.
If you shift your attention there, your body will do this. Move here. That's it. Thank you. That is, again, because of our wrong approach to the whole problem of life, we seem to get hung up on a problem, a pain. And because the mind is so deeply involved in this painful spot, the natural balancing trick that the intelligence and the body is capable of is prevented from functioning. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, normally the weight will shift over to the other side, mm-hmm. the other leg. We are supposed to be intelligent thinking human beings, and because we think, we get into trouble. Come on, try. That foot a little more turned in. Yeah, good. No, you're very tall, so push the other leg a little further away. Further out. More. Yeah, good now. Press this out. Right. And immediately you do that, you feel the pressure on your right foot lessening. Mm-hmm. Your mind seems to flow out your left foot. and then you are completely relaxed.
Apart from just here. That's alright.
That's a little bit of flesh being squeezed. Yeah. Not so. Thank you. Who wants to do Sarvangasana? You should understand? Right. Now, here, there are two parts of the body, one from here to here, the legs, and the other the torso. One naturally balances the other, doesn't it? Watch and see. See what happens now. See what happens now. See how beautifully the whole body adjusts itself from within. There's a little bit of trembling, that means the brain is active. You can see the shirt here, you can see that vein there. That means the brain is getting a bit more worried in case if the body falls down. Mm-hmm. Can that brain be brought back, brought here? Can you think? Can you think here? Not in your head. Can you think here? This is the halfway house.
Yeah.
This is the fulcrum, the balance. This is where the action is. So can you forget to think with the brain and think here? If you drop your hands down, you'll be able to do that. Why don't you blame? Yeah, all right, okay. Come on. Right.
Mm.
Right? A little more? You know, the brain has not completely come back here. It's still in your head. We'll take care of that. No. It's not here. The smaller the back, that is where the adjustment takes place in the Sarvangasana, mm-hmm. The shoulder stand. If one is able to, and therefore, forcing in a yoga posture defeats its purpose. If you apply force, if it is violent, it defeats its purpose. Because in that violent movement, the brain is completely clouded. The mind is completely clouded, anxious, frightened. And so nothing happens. If the same yoga posture is done with great gentleness and inward concentration, feeling, attention, then there is no tension. You suddenly begin to discover the beauty that the body is inside, deep within yourself, and how that intelligence is capable of managing its own affairs as long as there is no anxiety to do or not to do. Right?
But doesn't the anxiety start occurring because it doesn't always take care?
No.
Well, in terms of...
The anxiety comes before. The anxiety comes before.
Now, but how about in the origin of the anxiety? Circumstances and what's happening with this intelligence don't always mesh.
Right. Correct?
Yeah.
Correct. And therefore, that gentleman, he was standing on the edge of the chair.
And he could have toppled over.
He toppled over. And then?
Then he's scared.
Why don't I see that the top? It was the intelligence that toppled me over.
Is that dumb?
Huh? Pardon? No, no. I look back upon it and I arrive at this wonderful conclusion that that intelligence in the body was incapable of looking after itself, and therefore I must figure out what the possibilities are. And therefore, the next time